Barcelona. Once Aditi and Castigliano left her office, Halleck called for two council members to join her in Jordan. Janos Rudaki, the former astrophysicist, and Deborah Adler, an Austrian-born economist. The four of them sat around the Oval conference table, ostensibly to discuss building starships. Rudaki reminded Jordan of a badger, compact, strong, dark. His suit looked as though it hadn't been pressed in years. His thick mop of black hair seemed uncombed. "I have a personal interest in this," he said in his slightly rasping voice. "My daughter is still on New Earth. Perhaps, if she will not return here, I might go to see her." Halleck said firmly, "You have responsibilities here, on the council, Professor." Rudaki waved a hand. "It's about time for me to retire, don't you think?" "No, decidedly not. I want you re-elected next year, not some interloping newcomer." And she looked directly at Jordan. "It's nice to be wanted," Rudaki muttered. Jordan kept his silence. Deborah Adler was considerably younger. Tall and full-figured, she was wearing a drab gray calf-length dress without any jewelry nor makeup that Jordan could detect. Yet she still looked appealing somehow. Is it the sadness in her eyes? Jordan wondered. She seemed almost like a little lost waif on the verge of tears. But so would I be, I suppose, Jordan told himself, if I were descended from people who'd been driven from their homeland by the nuclear holocaust. She was an economist, according to Halleck, a sad woman whose field of study was the so-called dismal science, Jordan thought, watching her. "I can call up the cost figures for the vehicle we sent to Sirius," she said, her voice low but steady. "I don't recall the exact amount, but it was close to $4 billion international.
"I should think we could do better," Jordan said. "After all, we have access now to the energy screens that Aditi's people have developed."
"But they are not propulsion systems," Rudaki pointed out.
"The basic technology can be adapted for propulsion," said Jordan. "We should consult Mitchell Thornberry about that. I believe he and his people are already looking into the propulsion question."
"Thornberry?" Halleck asked. "He's the one who patented the energy screen technology. He's made himself quite wealthy from this alien technology."
"The people of New Earth also gave Mitch a complete education about the basic physics behind the energy screens. We need Mitch to join this project."
With a wintry smile, Halleck said, "We don't have a project yet, Mr. Kell. This is merely a preliminary discussion."
"Yes, but once we get started, Mitch will be of inestimable value."
Halleck nodded. Adler said, "I'll call up the cost figures for the Sirius mission. We can use them as a baseline."
"Times 6," Halleck pointed out.
"I'll call Thornberry," Jordan volunteered. "Mitch will be happy to sink his teeth into the challenge of propelling starships."
"All in good time, Mr. Kell. Remember, what we're doing today is quite preliminary."
And Jordan remembered that except for their one dinner in Chicago, he hadn't seen Mitch Thornberry at all since their return to Earth, nor even conversed with him by phone or computer link. "Is Halleck deliberately keeping us apart?" he wondered. The meeting ended, and Halleck gave them all her thanks as she returned to her desk. Jordan thought about asking Rudaki and Adler to join him and Aditi for dinner, but then he realized that he didn't know where Aditi was, nor where he and she were going to spend the night. Back to the airbase? No, he decided, I won't go. I'll demand that Halleck give us back the hotel suite they whisked us away from. As Adler and Rudaki headed for the door, Jordan turned to Halleck, seated now at her desk, and asked, "Where's Aditi? And where will we be spending the night?" With an impatient flutter of her hand, Halleck replied, "See my assistant in the outer office. She'll take care of you." Jordan had to admit that Halleck's assistant did indeed take care of him. She was a youngish Kenyan, elegantly slim, her tightly kinked hair arranged in cornrows, her voice betraying just a hint of an Oxford accent. With a few quick phone calls, the young woman reserved a suite in the same hotel across the square from the Gothic Cathedral, got a Spanish Air Force jet to fly his and Aditi's belongings to the hotel, and arranged for a pair of security people to drive Jordan to the hotel. Before he left the World Council offices, though, Jordan asked the woman, "And my wife? Where is she?" Her deeply brown eyes widened slightly.
Why, she's with Signor Castiglione, sir.
And where might that be? I need to tell her that we'll be staying at the hotel again.
I'll see to that, Mr. Kell. I'll tell her to call you there.
Feeling more than a little nettled, Jordan said, I'd prefer to do that myself. Please tell me where she is.
With Signor Castiglione.
Here, in this building, I presume?
No, sir. They're at the communications center downtown. It's not far from your hotel, actually.
Before Jordan could react to that, she went on, It's a highly secure facility, sir. You have to have a special clearance to gain access to it, even on the telephone.
Then how?
I'll see to it, Mr. Kell. You go with your escort to the hotel, and I'll have Mrs. Kell meet you there.
I'm being stonewalled, Jordan realized, by this young slip of a Kenyan.
Two security men entered the office, both young, trim, with short blonde hair and wearing identical navy blue blazers over pearl gray slacks. They stood like patient robots by the door. Trying to keep from frowning, Jordan said to Halleck's assistant, Well, thank you, then. I'll expect my wife to meet me at the hotel. Yet when Jordan got to the luxurious suite, Aditi was not there, nor had there been a phone message from her.